kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
I love Chris's disdain for Weezer.
He just rhymed bugs with bugs. This guy has $1 million.
Who's for Yo Gabba Gabba?
I was saying, with that statement alone, I was like, I understand why he has the disdain.
I thought I was the only person in the world.
Is everything coming through on stream, by the way? I should probably find out. Make sure I'm not talking to myself.
You keep talking over me, and I don't know if my mic's working.
Yeah, I hear us.
Okay.
Yay.
Anyway, Cole, what was that about not liking Weezer?
Weezer's garbage. But also, I thought I was the only person in the world that remembered Yo Gabba Gabba because I fucking hated it.
Did you?
Yeah. But I remember number two running around all the time going, there's a party in my tummy. I was like, I'm going to blow my brains out. I hate
so bad. Wait a minute. So...
Yeah, I'm too old for it, and I don't have kids, so...
Is there a relationship between Yo Gabba Gabba and Weezer?
The song that I played was just a song that they did for Yo Gabba Gabba.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it's called All My Friends Are Insects.
Oh, okay.
And it was made by Weezer for Yo Gabba Gabba.
Because I've never watched the show, but I have dressed up as that guy for Halloween one
year. I can see it, too. No.
I don't know how you have to say the name. You know exactly who I'm talking about. Like, I was that guy from Yo Gabba Gabba.
No, there is only one guy from Yo Gabba Gabba, to be fair.
Uh-huh.
The rest are all creatures.
Hey, I could have been a creature that happens to be a guy, a male creature, but, you know. But I was the person you're thinking about. And I actually liked the costume, but I had never seen the show. And to kind of spoof on what, you know, Cole just said, the thing that people did use to reference the show to me was like, there's a song. It was like, there's a party in my tummy. So yummy. So yummy. And I'm like, why are grown men and women singing this song? Just eat the goddamn food. You don't need a party. Fuck, just eat.
Broccoli, do you want to go to the party in my tummy? I hate it. I hate it so bad.
You're the one who's going on about it.
I know it. Fair. But now it's just going to haunt me for like the rest of the night. All because y'all said Yo Gabba Gabba.
Well, I mean, the broccoli should want to go to the party, but it's in my damn stomach, and it's going to die.
And then, like, it cuts to the vegetables dancing in his stomach, and you're like, there's acid in there!
Of course, vegetables, not, like, a cake or something.
Exactly, yeah. No, like...
Also, know how they likely swallowed them whole, because being that it's a TV show and this is funny dancing, I'm sure it wasn't chewed up broccoli. It was just this whole sprig just hanging out in this guy's stomach. Like, how is he not dead from swallowing whole vegetables? I got nothing. Chew your goddamn food. There's your first Yo Gabba Gabba lesson.
I don't know if I want to keep this in the show or not. It's compelling, but it is so not related to us.
It never needs to be, if that's what makes it good. You know what? People tune into these shows and they go, what are they talking about today? I know there's going to be some reviews at some point, but you never can expect a goddamn Yo Gabba Gabba dialogue because no one planned it.
It makes it so hard because then I never know when to start the actual episode. I have to like find a good natural beginning point.
Start from the very start. Here's a
boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
Boom, boom.
That's the intro. Cole's
the Skype theme is our theme song for the week. Sorry, Viking guitar.
There it is. Well, there it is. By all Viking guitars to do, just they'll cover the Skype theme.
Get him to cover the Skype ringtone.
Yeah, he can do it.
For us. Idea. Oh my god.
He will crush it.
Write that down. That's good.
We have problems.
No, we've got Yo Gabba Gabba. And it's okay. It's adequate, I guess.
So, yeah, this is the SML podcast. Might as well keep all of it. Fuck it. Pernell's here. Chris is here. Cole's here. It's Party Cast.
Since when do I get final bidding? What the fuck is this?
Since Pernell had to go on talking about fucking Yo Gabba Gabba, and then you had to talk about Yo Gabba Gabba, and then...
Let's be honest here.
Cole, you're here. How are you doing?
Well, I was better before I got Yo Gabba Gabba stuck in my head.
The real reason is that you dissed Weezer, and he's like, I'm not having that on my show.
I just wanted to dunk on Weezer. I've never seen Yo Gabba Gabba.
Oh, yeah.
We'll continue shit-talking Weezer, then.
Well, now you ruined it.
Now we're on the show. Now it's live. Now it's on the record. So tell us, Chris, what do you think of the new Weezer record?
He has damn throat lozenge.
Those guys are like, I think they've been around for like 30 years now, right?
Yeah, they've been around for a minute. Like, I met a guy, I made a friend in Chicago back in like 2001.
And yeah, their first album was like 1994. Mm-hmm. So they are as old now as the Beatles were when they started.
That just makes them legends right by default.
Yes.
My brain hurts.
You're the one who played their song.
So if you had a dad in the 90s who went on and on about how brilliant the Beatles were, that's any one of us today that in any way likes Weezer. Yeah.
I swear, like,
are you saying that Weezer is as good as the Beatles?
No, I'm saying that the Beatles weren't as good as the old people say they were.
I don't know, man.
I say that all the time, and everybody gets so mad at me.
I feel like it's just a point where if a band can live that long, they just get grandfathered into greatness. That's just how it works. Like, you don't have to actually like them. You're just like, how long has Weezer been around? I was in high school when Weezer started. Well, fuck, they're legends now. There it is. You know, their songs? Not really, no. I think they were featured on a TV show or something, but they're legends. 30 years. Bam. Love them. Whatever. You know, because, like, with the Beatles, that's how I've always felt about them. Like, I acknowledge them for what they were, but I was the one guy in my friend circle when the Beatles Rock Band came out where I was like, okay, well, I know they have some iconic songs, but you'll have to tell me what they were because I don't know what they are.
All of them were iconic. In the Beatles Rock Band. All of them.
I think the thing with both bands is that they just happened to be around at the exact right time when the record industry was like, oh, this is going to make us a lot of money. And so, you know, they got foisted.
And I'm not going to go so far as to say that I dislike the Beatles. Quite the contrary. There are songs that I've heard of theirs, and I can smile about them. Like Yellow Submarine. I'll smile when I listen to Yellow Submarine. But I'm also going to be perfectly honest and admit that compared to what I generally listen to, Yellow Submarine is pretty far down the tank. It's just a decent song when I do listen to it.
You are very much the first person I've ever heard use Yellow Submarine as like the Beatles song.
Beatles song.
Like,
that's my,
I don't know about I don't know about the Beatles, but I love that Yellow Submarine.
That's the only one that, like, I have any kind of touchstone to, and that's because I actually drew a YOLO submarine for the show one time.
Oh, my God. Am I going to have to use that again?
Yes.
You're going to have to take it and put a lazily, sloppily pasted number 2 on it.
YOLO submarine. So now I want to sing that song.
You should do a Weezer Blue Album parody with all 4 of us.
Jesus.
That's true.
Now you're asking too much.
Now we're asking actual work of her.
It's literally 4 dudes in front of a blue screen.
I charge $15 an hour.
Paste our images and just like trace over them. Like,
I don't have a blue screen or a green screen to stand in front of. You have to like put me in front of a blank door.
We just have to be a drawing of me because I don't do any pictures of myself. So.
You're just a stick like figure. A
Make us all stick figures. I want to be a stick figure.
Stick figures I can do that.
Awesome. I haven't been a stick figure since my early 20s.
All those damn cheeseburgers, that's what gets us, man. They're so fucking tasty, though.
So whatever the image for this episode is, it's going to be fantastic, and it's going to be by Cole. So no pressure. Now you got to do something.
But y'all still like, owe me $15 an hour.
It's literally got to be 4 stick figures, but 3 of them will be incomplete. She's going to
just be a bill for the work. That'll be the image for the episode, a $15 bill for work.
You can donate at coffee.com/Cole.
Take an exam. But like, it's the sad part. It's like, I'm trying to remember one song that I think might have been the Beatles, but I don't think it was.
Is it Maxwell Silver Hammer? Is that your other hot?
I don't even know that song. I feel safe there. I never even heard of that one.
It's a violent song.
I'm just playing with the whole Barnacle Bill or something. Some definitely not a hit.
Some song. D-side.
Yeah, some D-side. Yellow Submarine's one of the ones Ringo sang.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I thought people liked Ringo. Marge Simpson had a crush on him.
He's a drummer.
Oh, but, Marge Simpson wrote to Ringo. He's like, y'all hanging on me wall. All this stuff.
Aw. Yeah, that was pretty sweet, actually.
Yeah, that was a great episode of The Simpsons. And she's like, I painted this old crusty man with his liver spots, and Smithers fainted. It was a great episode. Bony old behind. But, about the Beatles things, I never quite gelled with them, and I was the oddball out when everybody was getting geeked about their game coming out, and I had to have it explained to me how hard it is to get licenses to their stuff and blah, blah, blah. So then it got me thinking, would Weezer be that band right now if there was like Weezer Rock Band? Do you have any idea how much
of a...
Not at all. No, because Weezer was very easy to get into Rock Band.
They have to pay them to not be in Rock Band. Like, we don't want your music. It's terrible.
Maybe that's why they're ubiquitous, is that they're very easy to license.
Well, maybe. Then the question becomes, what do you think would be our age's version of the Beatles in that context? Like, I can't believe they got them in the Rock Band, a whole Rock Band game, just of this band. No one saw it coming. Like,
I mean, they made a whole Rock Band about Aerosmith, didn't they? No, it was Guitar Hero.
Yeah, that was Guitar Hero. Let's see if there's any current band, I would have to go with Tool.
Is Tool hard to book, or hard to get access to their stuff?
You're not even allowed to take a camera near them.
Damn.
They're very protective. They were in one Guitar Hero game, and if you picked any of their songs, you only got this weird Tool inspired animated background. You didn't get any of the animated characters.
I thought you were about to say there was only one song, and when you picked it, a screen would flash res, you should not have done that.
No, they actually got three songs, which was impressive, but it didn't go anywhere else from there.
That makes sense. That sounds like that would be a very solid candidate then for Tool Rock Band, for people to lose their shit over.
Oh, I would lose my fucking mind if they announced a Tool Rock Band.
The funny part, now you got me thinking, I'm not sure how familiar you are with, who am I kidding? This arcade these days, they're fucking dead in most places, but the arcade near me has a Guitar Hero machine still, and people, to this day, spend way too much money on a game they can probably get for $10 if they went and bought it, because they produced so many copies of it.
There's something different about having that audience there of mall passerbys. I'll be like, oh, wow, and look, he's playing Kansas. Let's listen. And
that's just it, though. They don't even have it. Like, I used to do that when I would play Guitar Hero at a Best Buy, because Best Buy always had it in a prominent place where you would get that audience. But in this arcade, you're not going to get it because it's behind the dance games. So if people are going to be seeing anything as they pass by, it's people playing dance games. Guitar Hero is practically secluded. So it's basically these people going, oh, man, I can rock out to my favorite hits. This is the shit. And they're playing songs I would never pick in Guitar Hero, but they love them, and I'm not going to judge them. But they pick songs I don't play. Anyway, the point is, I think it would be interesting to see one of these games pop up in an arcade in the present day, because I feel like it would be easy money for these guys. Because for the few arcades that are left, they're prominent for getting people to go out and just do something. This is a place to go hang out with my girl and just putz around and some shit. So then what better way to get money out of suckers than being here's a song that we grew up to. We love it. I can rock out to it on this guitar game. I can even do easy mode because she can't tell the difference. Look at me. Oh, no,
she could tell. She could tell.
You're not rocking out at all.
Sack up and play on Xbox. Come on.
So now I can just imagine it, like, check me out, baby. Check this out. And she's like, that is clearly easy mode. You barely played any of the notes. You should shame yourself. I don't date men who play easy mode. Damn. Stop.
What root notes in fifth? What are you, a bass player?
I didn't mean to pick bass mode. It was automatically set.
My thing is, I play bass in Rock Band. That's what I prefer to play because it's easier.
I play bass in real life, so I'm the real butt of this joke.
That's ultimate easy mode.
The funny thing is, like, there definitely some songs in, like, Rock Band and Guitar Hero where, like, we'd be doing the whole band mode thing, and then the one person, like, you know, I'm feeling a little tired tonight. I'll pick bass mode for this song. And then you pick, it's like, holy shit, I was wrong.
Oh, yeah, there's definitely, bass definitely has a couple of good songs out there.
Oh, fuck. They have, like, Yes in some. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, that guy there's is a
couple
a great
of Yes bassist. Songs.
Yeah, yeah.
How about any No songs? You know
how to. Only when it comes to Tool.
Can we from late? Non-point, does that work?
I'll allow it. Bam.
I was looking through my Spotify playlist because I was like, I don't think I've ever even heard a song from Tool, and I don't have any on my playlist. And I was like, well, I guess not then.
Are they even on Spotify?
Maybe not, but I was thinking, like, the greatest chance for me to have them on my playlist would be through the Crow soundtracks. They're not.
No, so. The only soundtrack I think that they were on was Escape from LA.
Yeah.
Escape.
I definitely don't have that.
That was a really good soundtrack.
Was it?
It was a fantastic soundtrack.
Oh, they are on Spotify at least. Huh. But yeah, I don't.
I think that's a recent development. Yeah.
Any
some
of
people,
these songs.
Some people were very happy about that.
Yeah, because I know when they finally joined up with iTunes, I think last year it happened. It was a huge deal. They were top sellers for weeks.
3 million monthly listeners.
Yeah.
Who?
3 million people they don't care about.
Hey, we get our money. That's all they care.
Hold on,
that's a flow. That's a flow. They're like, we write music, we walk away. You guys want to listen to it and get us paid? We're not going to complain. It's the purest form of capitalism for music. It's like, you walk away, pay us.
Lin-Manuel Miranda gets 5 million monthly listeners, so there's that.
It's amazing.
A little bit of a different audience that they're going for.
Yeah, Smidge? But it's still a funny difference.
Smidge?
Just a gibble?
Are we going to talk audience numbers? Because let's fucking throw up audience numbers. SML podcast. Fucking 12. Yeah, buddy.
Well, clearly we need to start playing more Tool during reviews. That's the trick.
That's the problem.
We would get sued to fuck.
Or we can get a collaboration going.
While you're on Spotify, how many monthly listeners does Lit have?
Lit?
Yeah.
Let me
that might be search. The 90s Beatles.
Actually, now I want to hear the Lich. Tell me more about this Lich band.
Lich has 2,195,171 monthly listeners.
But now you know.
Why would they be the Beatles? They have one song.
What?
Lit.
Lit.
Yeah, they have one song.
Oh,
really?
Yeah, My Own Worst Enemy.
Oh, you know how that goes. They're most diehard fans, like all the other tracks no one talks about, too.
I want to meet a diehard.
I don't think they have any other tracks.
They have to.
They do. They have other songs. Hold on, wait. Let me back up. I hit buttons. Give me a second here. They had other songs. They had, like, let me see. They have My Own Worst Enemy Explicit is their most popular.
Yeah.
With 176 million plays.
Yep.
My Huge Own song. Worst Enemy radio edit is next.
Okay, so they have one song.
And that is 17 million plays.
The next one is
My Own Imagine. Miserable.
I'm about to say, is the third song My Own Worst Enemy Best Friend Edition?
I find it amusing soundtrack that the next version. Song has the song that is not My Own Worst Enemy has 5 million less plays than the radio edit.
Who is loading up Spotify and they're like, oh, Lit, this is my favorite song. No, I don't want the studio version. I got to hear the radio edit.
I don't want swearing in my tune.
I love Lit so much that I'm going to willingly listen to him instead of turning on any radio.
Every now and then I beat the living. Ah, la, 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 la.
They yeah. have multiple no, don't say it, albums, don't say. Though.
Please tell
yeah,
me.
Yeah, props to him for keeping at it.
Song
but
came out.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and then a live album.
That's, what the fuck that's was actually pretty live? Impressive.
Yeah, the last one was 2018. No, there was one last year.
If we're going to look up awful bands from the 90s, how's Trapped doing?
The one from last year was the same one from 1999, but the expanded edition.
Oh, okay.
So then there was one in 2018.
I would have thought that would be real. I would have thought that would be really funny. If in 2020, the guys from Lit were like, you know what people need right now? They need a new album from Lit. In these trying times.
Well, yeah. They might be saying that because they want to get a check cut. I mean, that's just how that goes. Like, you know what? These people need something that'll get us paid. Let's give it to them.
Oh, my God.
Who was he saying to look up, Joe?
Trapped.
How do you spell that?
T-R-A-P-P. And I only know about that band because...
Oh, they're fucking awful.
Okay, I was making sure that it was like... Are they bad?
Oh, they're awful.
2.3 million monthly listeners.
Still? Wow. They burned a lot more bridges than that.
Their number one song has 249 million plays.
Headstrong?
Yeah.
What?
And then their next one has 15 million.
Shocker. Shocker that they have, again, one song.
Oddly enough,
we could do this all day.
They're trying to locate their most popular song. It's weird because it has their second most popular song is Echo with 15 million. But then it says their fourth most popular song is Bring It with 16 million. So I don't know what the algorithm is doing with that. That one clearly has a whole million more plays, but it's 2 points further down the list.
Maybe it's just newer, so it has more recent listens compared.
Recent playing.
Yeah, compared to the classics. Classic.
I don't
Trapped.
Know. It's got the same album art as the Headstrong, the other one has a different album cover.
I heard that Trapped sold their entire discography to Michael Jackson once for $10.
2, 3, 4. They had a new album last year.
They did have a new album last year, and it was awful, and it performed horribly. Actually, I can't say it was awful because I didn't listen to it.
It looks like there's
so it could have been really good.
Well, that's fair. At least you already acknowledge. Like, well, I can't judge what I haven't heard, but you can speculate.
I can speculate because their politics are fucking dog shit, and the singer is an awful human being.
That's enough for me. Welcome.
So, yeah, speaking of awful things, should we get to reviews? We have a lot of games to talk about.
This is
why we can't get cool.
We have a lot of fucking awful games to talk about tonight. It's just trash top to bottom.
Hey, guys, can we do a review for your game? And tune in. Here are a bunch of shitty titles we're going to talk about.
Look at this shit stack we got lined up.
That's even funnier knowing what we have lined up.
Yeah, because we have some good stuff lined up, too.
Yes, we do.
I'll be the judge of that. Thank you. Do not put words in my review's mouth before I have had a chance.
We have a mixed bag coming up. How's that?
There we go. More accurate.
Yeah. Okay. Well, first game to talk about tonight is called Super Meat Boy Forever. Developed and published by Team Meat, released April 16th on Xbox One and PS4 for $14.99. Meat Boy and Bandage Girl have been living a happy life free of Dr. Fetus for several years, and they now have a wonderful little baby named Nugget. One day while our heroes were on a picnic, Dr. Fetus snuck up on them, beat Meat Boy and Bandage Girl unconscious with a shovel, and kidnapped Nugget. They cracked their knuckles and decided to never stop again until they got Nugget back and taught Dr. Fetus a very important lesson. Cole, tell us about your time with Super Meat Boy Forever.
No, not Nugget. Super Meat Boy kicks.
Or wait, do I have to go stuff? Super Meat Boy?
Oh yeah, there's that. That happens. Super Meat Boy just kicks everybody's ass, so I don't feel bad having to sit here and say, this game kicked my ass. It's one of the few where I can be like, look, I beat A level and I did good. Okay. I beat more than one, thankfully, but I did not make it near as far as I would like. Because it's incredibly hard. That's the way Super Meat Boy is supposed to be. Although I would say that Super Meat Boy Forever does have a couple of hitches it runs into with that. Yeah, it's fucking insanely hard. They add in the element of making Super Meat Boy Forever an endless runner, which cranks up the difficulty so much more than you could possibly imagine. there is no way to just stop and survey the situation before you need to figure out where you're going to go or how you're going to approach it. I know that the whole point of like Super Meat Boy was that people did speed runs of it and was like, how fast can I get through the levels? And I appreciate that. That's not how I like to play. And that kind of play wrecks me. Just fucking trashes my face. Right? And that's fine. I knew that going into Super Meat Boy Forever. I don't hold it against it. But it is something to make note of if that's a problem for you. If you're like, oh, fuck, an endless runner. Nope. Well, here you go. It's an endless runner. There's your warning. I was hopeful that the fact that it's a runner would maybe help me out a little bit and that I wouldn't have as much to control. And so in some ways, it was a blessing and a curse because it would not have to worry about, you know, the fatigue on my hands from moving was good, but having to worry about the fatigue on my hands from doing something 1700 times just to get past it was a whole different story.
Yeah.
Everything you do, you're going to have to do over and over and over because there's no way to, excuse me, sir. There's no way to learn what you're doing until you fail at it, which makes the fact that they're, why are there people
in the dog? It's a party over there right now, isn't it?
You can hear it?
I heard the dogs barking, heard the bunny making some stompings.
It sounds like there's somebody in my driveway.
That's new to me.
Oh, yep, hold up.
So, Super Meat Boy Forever. I'll be honest, I wasn't really feeling my time with the game. The whole auto-running aspect for me, it just, I couldn't really get into it.
It hurts it a lot. Like you guys played a review code. I bought it on release day on the Switch because I was buying it sight unseen because of the Super Meat Boy Legacy. Like, oh yeah, Super Meat Boy. I played the crap out of that game. I'm going to love this by default. And like four levels, and I was like, I don't think I like this game very much.
Did Purnell take over my review while I was gone?
We both kind of jumped in.
Okay.
I mean, you just kind of like bailed on us. You're like, peace, bitches.
There were people in my driveway.
Hey, like, Joe's not going to edit that out either.
No, I'm not. I'm keeping all of it.
Yeah.
Like, are you talking about Meat Boy over there? Hold up.
So strangers in Cole's driveway, what do you guys think about Meat Boy Forever?
Well, great. I kind of think that the mechanics with the auto running are a little awkward. The timing is a little timing windows. No.
Is that what you said about it, that the timing window
No, was I couldn't get into the whole auto running aspect of the game. And it just not being able to control Meat Boy and having it come down to just rote memorization.
Yeah.
It just kind of ruined it for me.
And the thing about that, if you add on to that a bit, so the original Super Meat Boy was a very high precision platformer. Like when you got into mastery mode, you were like nailing some crazy ass jumps, pulling awesome like threadbare like squeezes between buzzsaws and like platform.
That's the very first level here.
Yeah, and but the thing about it with this game though is that they do that while being an auto runner. And while still having you have to do things where you have to like go left and right. And in this game, since it's an auto runner, going left is controlled by like making him careen into a wall and then just like bouncing back. And it's so maybe it's just me, but I think that's extremely unintuitive for the way that kind of game is laid out to be played. Like,
agreed.
Yeah. It's not my favorite mechanic. I don't hate it. I've played other auto runners, so I'm fine with it. My bigger gripe is just that it's not as responsive as it should be. The hitboxes can be a little iffy.
A quick question for you. Mm-hmm. Like, you said, like, you know, you played other auto runners. So, like, if you were to say compare another auto runner, one that you particularly like, mind you, to how Super Meat Boy does auto running, like, do you feel as though those games may say potentially handle momentum better, or like their level of like platforming better? Because the reason I'm asking is because I don't dislike auto runners at all. They can be pretty fun.
Yeah.
It's just taking Super Meat Boy's concept and turning it into an auto runner.
Yeah.
That was the hiccup for me. It's like, it didn't feel like it translated well, is what I was trying to reach for. So like, how do you feel in regards to like that, comparing that to like one of your favorite auto runners?
I don't know that I have a favorite auto runner. Most of the ones that I have played. Does anyone have a
favorite auto runner?
Yeah. I think most of the ones I have played have been Radalekas in the first place. But I mean,
or mobile games.
Yeah, but the bigger issue for me with Super Meat Boy is that the speed and precision required is what makes the auto runner aspect less desirable. Like, you have to be frame perfect on some of those jumps. There was one checkpoint I hit where it was right before a huge ass saw, because of course it was. And I could hit the button as soon as I had control of Bandaged Girl and still hit the saw every time. Like, she would just run right into it. And it didn't matter what I did. It was one out of every 10 times she would actually jump over it. That was a bigger issue for me, that the responsiveness of hitting the button, you could hit the button just the moment you had control and it still wouldn't do it. That's my issue. If you're going to have a platformer, auto runner or not, that is frame perfect, just no pixel forgiveness. That's what Super Meat Boy is. And I knew that going into it. If you're going to have that kind of requirement for precision, you better goddamn make sure your buttons react. And if they don't, then you've got bigger issues. There definitely needs to be some finessing done, at least as far as Xbox goes, to make those more responsive. It felt like it was a battle between me and my controller rather than a battle between me and the game. That's not cool.
Yeah.
I do agree that like it's not the most intuitive setup with the auto runner element. Because there is the puzzle requirements where you have to not just figure out how you're going to get over or around these obstacles, you have to figure out how you're going to get pointed in the right fucking direction to do it. And it's not intuitive. It is something that definitely you just kind of pick up as you go along, and then you kind of find yourself doing it out of habit. But it's still, it can be difficult. And I know when Shiz, I watched him play it twice, he beat it. I sure as shit didn't. I might sometime in the next decade. Who the fuck knows? good luck to me there. But there were definitely some later levels where even he was like, I just can't wrap my head around the mechanic of it. And one of those later levels, God, mild spoiler, but there are like these spiders that crack the screen. And so because it's an auto runner, like you keep looping around, or you can loop up and down. And like just the mechanics of trying to get Meat Boy where he needed to be on those levels. Like, I thought Shiz was going to cry both times. That is the angriest I have ever seen that man on stream. And that man is perpetually angry.
Didn't you call me?
It was, I was like, this motherfucker is about to get himself Twitch banned. He's that mad.
I would have watched that so much, so hard.
I'll see if I can find a clip for you. I watched him play it twice within the last 6 months because he played it on PC and then again on Xbox this past week. And I don't know how he did it, because I can't The interesting thing was watching him play it, I could figure out how it was supposed to be done, but I'm not sure if when I reach that point, I'll be able to actually put that thought process into motion, or if I'm just going to sit there and look at it and cry as Meat Boy runs around and around and around. I'm a little concerned. I may never reach that part for it to matter, but but there are definitely some parts, puzzles later on that are just, they're just total mind fucks. Kudos to the devs for coming up with something that creative, but also fuck, who hurt you?
Well, keep in mind, also worth noting, because I think it's important for this aspect of the discussion, is that the way they designed the game itself is, it's an auto runner, yes, but it's also auto generated based on a set of different rooms that they just kind of randomly link together.
Now, I know it's supposed to be procedurally generated. I have not seen evidence of that procedural generation. The closest I've seen is like sometimes some of the debris in the background is not where it was. I haven't seen actual like major changes to the levels to justify calling it. Then again, I play like Enter the Gungeon and shit that's procedurally generated. So my expectation when somebody says this is procedurally generated is this shit's going to be fucking crazy different, right? So maybe it just wasn't different enough that I felt like it was.
I don't think it's every time you play the stage. I think it's just every stage is different. Like your stages aren't my stages.
Really?
Exactly that. What he just said. So
there's, it's not every time you play it's different. It's just what you're playing is yours.
Mm. Yes. Well, I think of it like you can get a seed number basically from it too. So like,
by the way, I have to throw a correction. I said it was $14.99. It's $19.99. I've been trying to sneak that in there. I fucking give up trying to sneak it in. Go back to talking.
Good job.
But like, so basically, when you start a game, the game builds every stage for you when you start a game.
Oh, that's how they did it then. Because I kept looking at it going, I don't get it. It's not procedurally generated. I was so frustrated. I was like,
start up on a new profile.
Okay. I might have to try that then.
Yeah. You'll see.
Hmm.
But yeah, $20 on Super Meat Boy Forever. What is everyone thinking? Chris, did you play it?
No, I have never played a Super Meat Boy.
Okay, then never mind.
How is that real? How have you not?
I missed the entire Xbox 360 and PS3 era. I was very poor. I couldn't afford games, and I wasn't attached to a podcast.
Then the question becomes, did you have, you know, like a friend you can mooch off of? Like, hey, I see you spent a lot of money.
I actually, I've always had this, like, small stack of Xbox 360 games that I got really cheap from work, which was Best Buy at the time, which is also why I was poor. And I always was, like, rooming with somebody who had one. And if it was, like, in the living room or something, sometimes I'd sneak a little playing in there. But it was just, like, vertical shooters and the game Two Worlds.
Beautiful.
I have played more Two Worlds than I have Oblivion.
We need to get you set up with Two Worlds 2.
I already have it.
But I mean, now I have the Velvet Edition?
No.
The Red Velvet Game of the Year Edition.
Two Worlds.
Where did it get Game of the Year?
I don't fucking know, but it exists.
That's like The Last Ninja on NES has this sign, has this like this banner on it that says Game of the Year, and it was the same year that like Super Mario Brothers 3 came out. It didn't cite any sources. It just said Game of the Year.
It was a game that year.
It was. Yeah, it was a game of that year.
So, Super Meat Boy is a game of this year. What does everyone think of it?
I'm going to roll with a try it, just because I think the difficulty of it makes it out of reach for a lot of people.
For now, what are your thoughts?
My take is, if you're coming into this like, I love Super Meat Boy, don't use that as your reason for buying this game. Look at some video of it. Do listen to this review in depth, but definitely try it, but not a buy. It's more of a try it first. It's got
I'm a little more on the hesitant side, but I could roll with a try it. I wasn't too keen on the soundtrack either, so, but that's just me.
Well, I mean, you can't follow what Danny Baranowski did to whoever they ended up getting after that, because it never matched up afterwards.
Nothing ever will. But
I will say one of my favorite things in the game was the squirrel with the prosthetic limb. That was a little twig and leaf.
Oh, the squirrel. Genius.
genius.
Oh, it's a funny
prosthetic
game.
Limb, like a tree limb.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that, but that's oh, that's gold.
That's good wordplay.
Mm-hmm.
I also sign off on this. The game is a try it from me.
It's an A plus in wordplay.
We just spent 20 minutes talking about Super Meat Boy. Yay. Next game to talk about is called Astro Aqua Kitty, developed and published by Tiki Pod, released April 8th on the Switch, April 15th on PS4 and Vita. Wow. For $14.99, coming soon to Xbox and PC as well. Aqua Kitty cats have launched into space in an all-new action RPG shoot 'em up adventure. Pick your crew, then blast off to investigate mysterious water-filled asteroids. Battle bizarre enemies, mine magnificent gems, grab new weapons, install enhancing devices, and unlock your crew's unique skills as you level up XP. Just watch out for marauding pirate rabbits, always trying to be the first to the loot. Pernell, tell us about your time with Astro Aqua Kitty.
So,
your experience.
Fucking yeah!
I'll thanks Cole for the gift sub.
Yeah, Cole, thank you for dropping the gift sub. Look at you. Good. How nice of you.
Now I get wet pancakes again.
Yay. Yeah, Astro Aqua Kitty. Cole's throwing us off.
So
shenanigans.
So Astro Aqua Kitty is the sequel to Aqua Kitty UDX, basically, which released a couple of years back, and I was a big fan of that. So I was
pretty I like that game too.
Oh, yeah. So, like, I almost bought this one. Like, I didn't think we was going to get a code. I was like, I'm ready to buy it. And then Joe came through at the last second. I was like, look what I got. I was like, yeah, bro. So what ended up happening was, you know, of course, I'm playing the game, and it's time to review. So how does this game work, and how does it compare to Aqua Kitty? Well, before the Astro came in. Well, Astro Aqua Kitty exchanges the Defender-style gameplay for full-on, like, exploration gameplay. There are about 8 or so levels where you beam down, and your goal is to just kind of run through the level, complete the objectives, and get to the final boss on the stage, defeat it, and move on. However, the way this is done is through a sort of, it's interesting how the stages kind of feel like an exploration scenario. So you beam down to the level, and it's just an open environment, you know, tunnels and things like that nature. And when you're swimming around in the levels, you'll come across the occasional kitty or whatnot that's hanging out, like, hey, I need help, you know, unlocking this gate. I need an engineer to unlock this gate. So now you're swimming around this environment looking for an engineer that can board your sub that you can take back. He'll unlock the gate for you. That's like just one example of something. But then there's also like general environmental hazards you have to deal with depending on the stage that you're on. The gameplay as a whole, though, for your ship and what makes it different from the other game is that at the very beginning of the game, you have to choose two characters, essentially. A pilot and an engineer. And each of those characters determines, one, your sub's base stats, like, you know, its health levels, its attack power, its energy levels. But in addition to that, they also each come with their own set of skills that can be unlocked when you level up the sub. Level up, that's what I said. So in this game, that's another thing that they added and changed. You also gain experience points when you destroy and defeat enemies on the stages. And after a certain number of points, you will level up your sub. And this allows you to do a few specific things. For each level you gain, you are able to spend gems, which are earned through levels, to upgrade either your health, your armor, or your energy. One level per level that you level up. So, for example, level 6, you can level up your health, armor, or energy up to 6 energy bars if you have the gems to do so. In addition to that, there are a ridiculous number of weapons and device accessories that you can equip on the sub that generate different gun power, and they each come with their own different types of stats, and those guns are level based too. So say, for example, you might have the virus gun. You can find a virus gun ranging from like level 1 to like whatever the max is, and as long as you have the prerequisite level to equip it, you can put it on, and you can have up to 2 weapons and 4, you know, equipable, like, stat-boosting devices equipped at one time. So you'll be doing a fair bit of swapping out here and there. Like, you might get a weapon that seems cool now, but now you're in an environment where this other weapon might be better. So you'll just take the one off and swap it with the other one. And also, of course, as you get higher-level guns or items, you'll recycle them, which is the equivalent of selling them, to get gems for them and make room for your new gear. Because your cargo hold, which is where all your gear goes, is also limited space. As you're exploring the environments, you also will come across the occasional docking station. Docking stations are where you save your game and also where you can purchase new goods and also spend your skill points to level up if you've earned them while, you know, playing the game. So, like I said, each character has their own, 5 different ones, and you will pretty much enjoy your fair bit of time just, trying to decide which ones work best for you. So it'll become an environment scenario where you'll play the game, you'll choose your 2 guys, which of course will determine what your build possibilities will be, and you'll just kind of customize your ship based on how you play with those 2 guys. The one gripe I had about, because the game itself is still a blast, but the only thing that bugged me, and I think this may be a complaint exclusive for me, is almost like the levels are too big. It's like I want them to be a little smaller because I want to get through the level, knock it out, and hopefully get to the end of the game and then try with another set of characters. But at the same time, the gameplay itself is fun, and the boss battles are a great deal of fun because they don't screw around. They bullets all over the damn place when you get to boss battles. So it's like, prepare to do some jucking and jiving on this bad boy. It's not a simple process of just like, well, I'm just going to stand in one place and watch myself win. Ain't happening. So overall, I feel like there's a lot of game here, a lot of character here, and the music is still quite a jam. Just like the music in the first game was good, the music in this one is also fantastic as well. Like,
adorable as hell, too.
Yes, it is. I love all the character designs in this thing. And it's just a good time. Like, even though the game can get challenging depending on the objective you're dealing with, I never really found myself feeling like I was overwhelmed or overburdened. I mean, because if you die, there's no life system. You just respawn at the last place you saved. Yeah. And there's plenty of docking stations to save the game, so you never really feel like you lost a bunch of progress. Gems to upgrade yourself aren't hard to come by. Well, I will say one other thing that kind of sucks, but it's, again, just a personal gripe, is that there's no real secrets to find. When you're on a stage,
they have huge maps, but no secrets?
Not really, no. Like, you might say, for example, come across a deposit on a wall that you can destroy and there's some gems in it, but there's no, and there's the occasional, like, treasure chest that you blow up and get, like, an item out of it, but they're not secrets. They're just on the stage. You'll see it, you'll blow it up, you'll get the goods. So, that kind of sucks, but, I mean, if you know what you're not going to get secrets, and I guess you can deal with it because the gameplay is still fun.
Yeah, well, as it stands, $14.99. What do you think of Astro Aqua Kitty?
I still think it's worth the scratch.
Fucker.
You know it, baby. It's a good time. Like, I enjoy the game for what it is. I may have my personal gripes about it, but if I had paid for this before the review code came through, I would not have regretted it for a second.
Cool. So I will look forward to it hitting Xbox in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
You know it's going. I say you know it's going to. There's no way it wouldn't.
Well, yeah, they announced it's going to.
Oh,
I said that in the beginning. Don't you pay attention?
Never. I geared myself up. I gotta get psyched up for the talking.
Ah, damn it, Pernell. Anyway, next game to talk about is called Shantae, developed and published by WayForward, released April 22nd on the Switch for $9.99. In her debut title, Shantae, hair whips, dances, and transforms as she seeks out 4 elemental stones hidden throughout Sequin Land to put a stop to the nefarious lady pirate Risky Boots. Chris, tell us about your time with Shantae.
Why do we sing the title?
Because we've done it since the beginning of this show.
Right. Okay.
That's probably one of the longest running jokes on the show is Shantae.
You have to do it every time.
Every time. Right. Shantae.
Well, that's a good thing I asked, Ben. All right. Well, Shantae is, what this is that, this is a port of the very first Shantae game, which came out in 2002, which was a late era Game Boy Color game. Like, the Game Boy Advance is already out, and that will come into play here in the review. So basically, the game, it's the first game, so it's, you know, if you're familiar with the series, then you have the titular Shantae, the half genie hero, who is charged with protecting that town, which the name of which already escapes me.
Sequin Land.
Sequin Land.
Oh, no, it's called, it's a town, though, in this, and I forget what it's called. what kind of town? I don't remember. Anyways, whatever. Y'all know. Everybody knows this. This series is very famous. But yeah, basically, yeah, you run around and whip things with your hair and jump around and stuff. And after the initial getting through the town and fighting the first boss, the game kind of opens up a little bit more. And you go around exploring and finding new creatures that you can turn into through dance. And it has like a bunch of different like interesting features for the time, such as a day and night cycle. So it turns to nighttime sometimes when you're playing every a few minutes. And when you're
walking through Scuttletown.
Scuttletown, thank you.
And, I found it, yay. I looked it up.
Oh, okay. I figured you did, but you know, I was going to let it go.
I looked it up via soundtrack listing.
Nice. And, you know, during the nighttime, there's like different things that you can do. Specifically, you can dance for money in the town. Yeah, there's a dance hall with a bunch of similarly dressed ladies lounging about. And if you go there at night, then you can actually play a rhythm mini game, which is, you know, literally just dancing. And the better your score, the more money you get. So that's I don't know if that has come up in other games, but that's definitely in this one. And I tried it in rank E, which is just like the, you know, the really, really basic, easy dancing and stuff. You know, it just has the number, you know, the button goes up through the little bar and you know, press it at the right time. You know, it's very, very simple. But then I tried it on rank A and it's just like death metal speed. And I'm like, this isn't even a good dance. It's just like fast forwarded. It looked like somebody just cranked it to 4x and like, you know, just let it go. And I'm like, okay, so at that point, they didn't want to make a song that was that fast because it's not really a song. It's just like kind of just a rhythm. And yeah, she's like, blah, 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 blah. You're like, yes. Shantae rocks out. Shantae. And, but anyways, it's love like, it. It's pretty cool. As a side scroller, it's pretty cool. As in, you know, like, it's got like different perspectives too. Whenever you're in town, it's like a kind of over the shoulder, like behind, you know, behind your shoulder as you like scroll around buildings, which reminds me of Arcana, which is a Super Nintendo RPG nobody's played. And the bosses are very clever. Of course, it's a Game Boy Color game, so it suffers from the usual things, such as like lots of blind jumping, lots of not knowing what you're getting into before you get into it. You know, enemies popping out from a side of the screen that, you know, because it's a largish sprite in a very tiny, you know, field of play, which was great on the Game Boy Color. But if you're going into this, like, you know, into 2021, you'll be like, why do I keep getting hit every single time?
Yeah, it's a product of its time, unfortunately.
Yeah. So, you know, that's the game in a nutshell. It's very charming. Characters are very good. Now let's talk about the extras that are on this version. So Shantae has come out before on the 3DS as a port, which is very kind of them, because the actual cartridge, well, they're reprinting the cartridge now, apparently. I saw on the Twitters. But, you know, so those are probably going to be like a regular human price.
No, they'll still be ridiculously priced eventually.
Yeah, exactly. As they get bought up.
My God. I have owned Shantae twice and I have lost it to ex-girlfriends twice.
No.
Oh, right.
And the one was autographed by Vert.
What?
One of them was autographed by Vert.
Oh, that sucks. Speaking of which, yeah, Vert did the soundtrack to this game, and of course it's amazing. It's
so good.
Possibly responsible for, you know, a kind of resurgence of, like, you know, really frenetic, you know, chiptune ending up in like modern games. Who knows? It has a bit of a legacy in that sense. Definitely the first time I'd heard of, like, you know, Vert was through this game. Anyways, so the 3DS version came out, which was great because it was, you know, $6 or something, $7 maybe. And that was much better than the hundreds and hundreds of dollars that an actual authentic cartridge cost. So, you know, and this version, okay, sorry, let me roll back a little bit. The 3DS version was nice, but it was basically just the Game Boy Color game, and that's it. You know, like all of their virtual console stuff, it's just, this is the game, that's all you get.
Yeah.
So this version did include some extras, including, for the first time since the game has started being ported, the Game Boy Advance Enhanced version, because Shantae is one of four titles that we know of on the Game Boy Color that are actually enhanced by playing them through a Game Boy Advance. The other two are the Zelda Oracle games, and what's the other one?
Mario and Donkey Kong?
It's actually Wendy Every Which Way.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. It had some bonus content. But so, Shantae, when you play it on a Game Boy Advance, you actually get a... On top Tinker of a Bat. Different...
A Tinker Bat.
A Tinker Bat, yes. You get a different animal dance that allows you to fly through the stages if you wish. Apparently it's broken. Like, broken as in makes the game too easy. I didn't play far enough to get to it, and I'll get to that in a second, too. But it also enhances the color palette, so, you know, the colors are a little more kind of mellowed out. They're pretty extreme in the Game Boy Color original, you know, because it had just this a very attractive but very loud palette of colors available. But, you know, the GBA, it kind of looks a little more Super Nintendo-y, if I could describe it in any way. But it's still the same... pixelated characters. There's also actually some pretty good filters. It plays in a high def kind of mode like you'd expect from an emulator. You can also turn on LCD mode, which turns on the presence of like pixels, and it actually does look pretty good. I turned it off, of course, and then of course it has a pixel perfect version mode as well, which is the best way to play it, but of course you lose some TV real estate on that. And so here's the thing that I found interesting. If you start a game of Shant, I didn't load up the song while I was saying, so I choked on it. Shant. If you start a new game on that game and then you play a Shant, the GBA enhanced version, you have to start a new game. The data does not transfer. So if you want to play through this game, you have to pick which one initially and stick with it.
Yeah.
However, that does give you now six file, you know, data files instead of the usual three. So, hey.
Is there any other benefit to playing the original over the Game Boy Advance version?
None that I can think of. I mean,
play the Game Boy Advance version, get the game-breaking Tinker Bat, and knock the fuck on.
It like a lot of the good ports of old games. It's just there for the people who want to remember it that way.
It works for me. So $10 on Shantae. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. I would say this is the definitive version, and it's still portable. You can still play it on your TV, and you've got two different versions of the game. I mean, for $10, a game that, you know, at one point you had to spend like hundreds of dollars or your own, you know, run your own emulator to play. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. A good deal. Go get it.
Cool. All right. Next up is First Class Trouble, developed by Invisible Walls, published by Versus Evil, released April 8th on Steam Early Access for $14.99. First Class Trouble is a party game where players must work together and against each other to survive a disaster. The goal is to shut down a deadly AI. Some players are imposters, secretly playing as human-like, human-looking killer robots intent on betraying the other players. Purnell and Cole, I believe the both of you played this. What do the two of you think?
Well, I don't know how much I got out of it, mainly because I suck at this kind of stuff, but let's see how I can go with it. And when I say I suck at it, what I mean specifically is dealing with humans on the internet that I don't know personally.
Humanity is pretty awful as a whole.
I have an interesting story about that.
I hope it involves someone talking about who wants to commit treason tomorrow. I want to commit treason tomorrow. That
was one of my your experience in the game?
It literally was. I'm like, you fucking kidding me?
Let me go ahead and detail what happened in my very first game. I made a female character because duh. And I loaded into a game. I found one in about 30 seconds. Not bad. Not mad about it. I was standing there. I didn't have my mic on. I hadn't said anything. Hadn't even moved because I was trying to figure out the controls. And a guy goes, "Oh, is that a chick?" And then he threw a champagne bottle at me, knocked my character out, and then proceeded to teabag me while making rape jokes.
Oh, Christ. Yeah.
Wow. Classy.
That's humanity. Now, note, we got to put this out in advance. This is nothing against the game itself. It's just us saying humanity sucks. The game itself is okay. But humanity
is my I do have some concerns about what kind of community has grown around the game.
Well, before we get to that, let's talk about the game first, because we could totally rag on the community afterwards. Yeah. So the game itself, the way it works out is, think of it kind of like a werewolf-style game. And I'll talk about what that even is if you don't know, with some more general gameplay mechanics. The idea is that you're on a space cruise liner, hull breaks in the ship, and you are slowly running out of oxygen. So everyone on the ship is trying to repair the oxygen systems. But simultaneously, while this is taking place, there is an AI system on the ship that is going haywire and trying to kill the humans. And those AIs are disguised as passengers on the ship as well. So what's happening is, as you're exploring the ship from floor to floor, the human players are trying to locate key cards, which they can use to ultimately remedy the situation that they're facing. But the automatons, or personoids, I think they're called, are ultimately trying to kill off the human players by and there's a few ways they can do that. So one,
but is, gameplay wise, you're kind of saying that there are imposters among us.
Exactly.
It is. And among I know you're saying, like, he kept saying werewolf, and I was like, just say among us, because that is a more updated reference that people will understand.
I will say this, though, since we're comparing it to Among Us, since they're both video games, the player interaction in this game, I feel, is a little bit more intuitive and more involved than what Among Us would offer. I'm just saying, you know, got to point it out, you know, because somebody might, oh, it's just Among Us. I'll just keep playing Among Us. Like, no, there's a little bit more going on here. But the idea is that, you know, you're running around, and there's a few different things you can do. Say, for example, if you're a personoid, right? So there are oxygen stations littering the environments you're in. So you can, like, say, find an oxygen tank and load it into an oxygen terminal to increase the oxygen flow in the area you're in. But a personoid can run around and dismantle those devices so that they can't even be utilized. Or another thing you can do is, like, outright just, like, find all the oxygen tanks, pick them up, and then never install them in anything.
That's what I did.
Oh, I loved it. I loved doing that. But in addition to that, another thing you could do is just, I guess, kind of be bad at what you're doing. I mean, I'm not sure if this is actually how it worked or not, but I sure as hell believe it did. But, like, you can smoke, right? So you can go find a pack of cigarettes and smoke. From a scientific perspective, if you're smoking, you're depleting the oxygen. I was doing that, expecting that to be how it worked. I don't know if that's what it did or not. And I don't want to assume, because I thought fire would do that too, but fire does not deplete the oxygen in a room. It's just a hazard for humans.
I was just walking around chain smoking.
Damn right. Someone showed up and was like, oh, fuck, I'm not smoking. Put the thing back out. I'm looking for help. I'm trying to save the day. But now here's where it gets interesting, though. Like, so normally in these games, the way you outright out a personoid, or in the case of Among Us, like, it's like just the imposter, is general voting scenarios, which is between every floor, there's a sequence where everyone can vote on who they believe is a traitor. One or I think it's just one. I'm not sure if you can vote for more than one at a time, but definitely one person at least. And once the vote is passed, if a number of people voted for an individual, they get jettisoned out the airlock and they are out the door. And then you have to determine if you believe all the personoids have been ejected or not. And if you believe they haven't been, you keep going. Otherwise, you're like, okay, if you believe they're all gone and you're wrong, you lose. So that's the normal way to get rid of a person. But you can also just straight up kill a guy. And one of the games I was in, someone outright called me out as being the traitor. And I was like, what are you talking about? I'm not the traitor. I was, but I was still learning the game. So I felt it was kind of unfair to be like, I'm not the traitor. I don't even know how the game works. So a dude came from behind me, hugged me so I couldn't move. And another guy came up and strangled me to death. I was like, well, shit. Mm-hmm. this game is pretty brutal. He's just all right, just murk a guy in the street.
Yeah, the kill system requires two to enact it and carry it out. So you have to have somebody on your side if you're going to actually get somebody. If there's a way to do it solo, I never figured it out. But, like, there was confession time. The other personoid in my game where I was the personoid was being a fucking idiot and gonna get us caught.
Mm-hmm.
So I kept running into him and like pushing them and eventually convinced somebody to help me kill them. I knew they were my teammate, but I fucking won because I sacrificed his bitch ass.
That sometimes you have beautiful. To. If they're doing a poor job at their role, they gotta go.
I was like, this fucker's gonna get us both caught. He's dead. And I convinced everybody he was the problem, which he was, but I convinced everybody he was the problem and got him out of there. And I finished the rest of it by sabotaging shit on my own.
And it's an interesting way to do that, too, because if you're really good at pulling it off, you can be the person in future arguments like, how am I the traitor? I just helped you. Guy.
Yeah, I just helped you show, you know, figure out who one of them was. So I mean, it does have its Among Us like elements. You know, you're in space. There's the imposters and crewmates. Or in this case, they're personoids and humanoids and or residents is the proper term. You know, it is. You do get to take over the Roomba. That's cool.
Yeah, that's kind of fun to mess around. The Roomba acts as like the you're dead camera per spectating element.
That's funny. There's a lot of customization. You get to create character. You get to unlock additional stuff for the character. It has its moments. My biggest concern is that I wasn't able to report when I did have that one incident. I couldn't find any way to report. My other beef is that I was playing with my controller.
Mm-hmm.
There's no tutorial that like full on walks you through the tasks. It's trial by fire, right?
Oh God, yes. And then what makes it even worse is they have that video you can watch, which while I'll admit is humorous,
doesn't tell you shit.
Explains shit about the game. It's just, do you like comedy? Well, we've got some.
So while I was playing with my controller, I'm not sure if all the functions are even mapped on a controller. The only thing I could do with my controller was walk around, control my camera, and then eventually I figured out how to pull up my inventory, and it was because I bumped my controller on accident. So what I was having to do was like walk around with my controller, but then use the keyboard to actually interact with stuff because it was never giving me any button prompts to show me what I could do with my controller. So a little more guidance would go a long way.
I agree with that. I'm fairly positive I didn't do everything I could do in the game for the same reason, because it was all trial by error or trial and error with the controller usage.
Mm-hmm. It is still in early access, so obviously this is stuff that can be addressed and worked on. They're estimating it to be in early access for 6 to 12 months. They're not sure if the price is going to go up at all. So as it stands, this game hanging out $14.99. What do the two of you think?
Cole first.
It's tough. It's got potential. It really does. But they really have some stuff that they need to work out. But again, it is early access, so there is time for that. And I just, one of my biggest issues is like how they're going to manage the community and the community's behavior, given the functionality that the game gives you.
Yeah.
You know, there's some major issues that are going to have to be addressed as far as that goes. I'm gonna go with a try it. If nothing else, keep your eye on it.
I was gonna say it's still early access, so making a verdict right now.
Yeah.
It's still more or less keeping your eye on it or wishlist it maybe.
Maybe wishlist it, keep an eye on it, maybe join the Discord and try to have some community input, because That's definitely seems to be what they need, is some more input.
Cool. Pernell, what do you think?
I'm going to go more so with a solid try it too, because while I, like Cole, though not on as higher level, because holy fuck, that story. I also had issues with the community aspect. I kind of come into these games assuming that people who play them are already familiar with what they're going to get into with, like, playing with randos online. But there's also that good potential for a game like this, just like how Among Us got utilized, where if you get enough people that want to play with you, that you're friends with, you'll just have like a massive party, invite them all to one game and just have a nutty time with it. And if that happens, you're pretty much curating your own environment. Yeah. And if you've done that, I think there's tons of potential for fun in the game, because hidden identity games are always a blast for me. And I do like the idea of being able to be like secluded with individual players and like having to do like mini games together to coordinate events to be like, hey, I can trust this guy because we totally solved this puzzle together, you know, work with me. and it's just like this general, that general idea of like sabotage. Like I said, like the idea of being able to smoke a cigarette. And for the record, since this is early access, if you guys are listening to this episode, fire should absolutely decrease oxygen levels in environments, or at least have it a setting to do that. And also smoking should too, because I just like the idea of like sneaking around smoking cigarettes to deplete the oxygen levels.
Well, actually, if you were to smoke in that situation, the oxygen levels would be depleting.
I'll own that shit, because it's just, it would just be so much fun. Just the idea of like chain smoking to kill everyone else, not yourself.
That's our one good idea this episode, Pernell, adding that.
But like, I see genuine potential in this game. So, and I want them to work on it and do more with it. I don't want to let the audience be the reason why I knock it, because people just suck in general. So
the gameplay is there. The community just isn't yet.
Exactly. But the community can be there if it expands to the point where people pick it up, just like, how Among Us is right now. So many people play that. You're more likely to come across a good group of people, I think, than a bad group in that game. So,
don't wait for this to blow up. Help it blow up.
Help it blow up.
Yeah.
And then light a fire while smoking.
Yeah. And deplete all the oxygen. Anyway,
just blow it up.
Yeah, just blow it up. Fuck it. Blow the game up. That's not even an option for our reviews, but fuck it. Blow it up. That's our verdict.
Yes.
Next up, we got a 2-pack of games from Zetalon on Windows 10. Chris, you're going to talk about these two. We got Bullet Beat, developed by Turnox, published by Zetalon, released April 14th on Windows 10 for $4.99. Bullet Beat is a shoot 'em up where everything at the levels is in tune with the music, even shooting. Keep the combo to get stronger. Chris, tell us about Bullet Beat.
Okay, so Bullet Beat is a vertical shmup. Now, if you're not sure what a shmup is, let me explain. Just kidding.
Every time.
Just play Beaker Unloaded, and you'll know. I'm going to record that game someday, just the tutorial, so I can put it on YouTube and point people towards it. Anyway, okay, yes, this is a vertical shmup, and it is, as it says, it basically, enemies move and fire on a beat. The music style is generally this kind of what do you call the thing? The Skrillex thing, dubstep. Mm. It's like that. Wubby. A little bit of, huh?
Wubby.
Yeah, it's a bit wubby. It's a bit EDM-y. It's actually good. I quite like the soundtrack. Now, the description is, like, so what I was expecting in this game, because they were like, it's rhythm based, was that, like, okay, my character must also move in a rhythm. So you got to learn the rhythms to, like, you know, actually do that. That's not the case. It's just a shooter. In fact, you shoot enemies, and it usually takes a few hits to kill them, because this is that kind of game. And unless you upgrade your lasers or whatever, which can happen, you know, they randomly drop power-ups and stuff. And I was thinking, okay, what if I shot them to the beat? Would that do, like, more damage or something? Because I'm noticing I'm not doing a lot of damage. And no, not that either. Literally, it's just that you shoot enemies, and there's just general music that kind of affects the enemies more than yourself. I haven't found a way that the rhythm actually affects your player. So you've got two different modes to play through. One is, it's 8 stages, but stage 8 is also 8A, 8B, and 8C. and each one has a boss in it. And, you know, the way that the graphics work, it's very like stylized pixels. That is to say, it looks, it's very one dimensional, like, you know, no textures or anything like that. It's just like, it looks like pixels, but that they've been glossed over, kind of like a fancy Space Invaders. And the bosses are just that. They're just globs of pixels. I guess you could maybe say it's, well, it's not really voxel style. It's just, yeah, I'm going with just fancy pixels. you know, 8-bit with a sheen. And, you know, and you beat the bosses and stuff, and the bosses can, you know, be pretty cool. But again, they're more or less featureless. The enemies are kind of featureless. Sometimes the enemies can take the hits, like they sit perfectly still, and they're more of an obstacle because it takes forever to like actually kill them, and then by that time you're, you know, they're gone. And that's the thing, is that they praise this combo system for making you more powerful or whatnot. And of course, multiplying your score, but they're like, don't let an enemy like get past you. And but they send so many enemies, and you just got a little pew pew shooter that like you, that just happens, like you can't help it. And that comes a little bit more obvious in like the endless mode, because endless mode just keeps going. It's just like you just fight some enemies, and then a boss shows up, and by the time you beat the boss, your multiplier is going to be in like the hundreds, because you know you haven't been skipping anything. But then as soon as you start the next level, it gets reset because there's more enemies, and of course some of them are going to escape. And that's pretty much the game. I was reading some other reviews of it because I was like, okay, I need to figure out about this rhythm thing. Maybe something else is, maybe I'm missing something. So I'm going to read about it on Steam. Apparently, it had some features on Steam that I believe they did not put on the Windows 10 version, because I think reviews kind of were not positive on them. Apparently, it used to be that you could upload your own song and it would use like AI learning to actually make the enemies track to the music. And I was like, okay, that's a cool feature, but everybody's like, oh, it's so badly implemented. And I'm like, okay, so maybe they got kind of browbeat, no pun intended, into not including that in the Windows 10 version.
Well, I'm guessing the main reason it wasn't included is because this is probably more of a port of the console version of the game.
Must be, yeah.
That would be my guess.
Yeah, so...
Especially because the achievements, got to get those easy achievements on this one.
Yeah, and I believe it has them.
Yes, very much okay. So. I just looked at the list. It's to beat all the stages, get a 500 combo, and a 1,000 combo.
Yeah, you can do both of those. Well, a 1,000 combo might be tough, because again...
No, endless mode, it's easy. It's, yeah. You got it.
Easy on it. Okay. Yeah. I just must suck. So there you go. It's a truncated version of that thing. So, and you know, having said, like, it does seem like they, like, for instance, the option menu, you know, you go to the option menu and then controls, and it just says vibration, and you can't toggle it. You can just highlight it and then just back out of it. So clearly they haven't finished everything in porting this over.
Well, $5. What do you think?
$5. It's a decent shooter. And again, I like the music. You know, if anything, this is a fuck it. Why not?
It works for me. That's what I think about it. I think it's, yeah, it's cute. It's fun. It was an easy achievement list. I might drop the $5 to pick it up again on Windows 10 just for the hell of it.
Yeah, there was nothing in it that offended me, really.
All right. Well, next up is Reactor X, developed by Luvik Sama, published by Zetalon, released April 14th on Windows 10 for $4.99. This is a relaxing game about moving boxes on energy grids in a sci-fi setting in order to repair the spaceship, which was hit by a meteor. Chris, tell us about Reactor X.
Okay, so Reactor X. I think it's funny they call it relaxing. You can get killed by a laser. But anyways, I think Animal Crossing when I think like relaxing. But unless you're selling turnips. Anyways.
What's your stock price?
Ugh. I still, to this day, have not bought or sold a single turnip in any Animal Crossing ever since the feature was introduced. I was like, no, you can't. There's no capitalism in my peaceful island. Warthog can go take off. Anyways, so this completely unrelated game is... Yeah, it's about a repair bot who its job is to push boxes around, which is good because that is exactly what is needed in this game. You start off in a stage, and there are colored like squares on the floor, and they all have to be lit up. The way you light them up is that there are colored boxes that you can push around, and each box has a direction printed on the top, like either like a cross or like up and to one side or just a line. And whatever is indicated on the top of that box, those are the squares that are going to be lined up. So if it's a cross, then all the lines horizontal and vertically like perpendicular to it or whatever. Not perpendicular. What's the other? Anyways, it shoots lines in those directions. And you got to use a combination of the boxes to light up all the squares. So that's just the way that goes. It's just pushing boxes around until all the squares light up and then you're done and then you move on to the next level. Now, sometimes there will be, a collection of boxes that have no color affiliation whatsoever. And there are lasers that you have to push the box into first to charge it. And then you push it onto the squares. And, those are a little more complicated because you get to choose which patterns of light bringing that you're going to do. And of course they're limited boxes. So the wrong choice just means you have to resort them. And, that kind of like mental busy work is pretty, it's definitely like hooky. Like I definitely sat there and, played level after level. And,
this was a fun one. I enjoyed it when it was on Xbox. Again, another fairly easy achievement list on PC.
I was going to say, not only a fairly easy achievement list, but I was like sitting there playing and finally I was like, okay, this level 30 is actually pretty tough. So I'm going to go ahead and do this one. And I was like, okay, this is actually a pretty good little challenge. I can't wait to, I beat the game. There's 30 levels in the game. And the last one is actually somewhat challenging. The rest of them just breezed by. Now, I've recently been playing the 2D Zelda games, including Oracle of Ages, which thrive on having puzzles exactly like this. So it might just be that my brain's a little tuned to this sort of puzzle, but definitely seemed like it was an easy game.
Yeah, pretty much. And again, the achievement list is just beat all the levels.
Just get up to level 30. You're done. And so, therefore, it is the first platinum achievement I've gotten on a Windows 10 game that I've reviewed.
Well, there is no platinum, but you got the 1,000 out of 1,000. You could go back and get some more in the Zetalon games.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, that one other Zetalon game I got, I bought on the Switch when I beat it, so.
Yeah. Well,
anyways.
$5 on ReactorX, what do you say?
It's good. Puzzle fans who like, that sort of, like, strategy of, like, thinking ahead of yourself, but there's no timer, there's no pressure. Like to, you just do it until it's done. If you like a nice relaxing time like that, then I say go for it. I will just warn, if you are a big fan of those kind of puzzle games, it is on the easy side. But at $5, that's not too bad to, burn through a quick game that gives you a little bit of pleasure. So cool. I'm going to say recommended, try it. Buy it if you're not very smart.
Cool. Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. Next up is Quantum League, developed and published by Nimble Giant Entertainment, released April 15th out of Steam Early Access for $9.99. Quantum League is a revolutionary time paradox shooter, a competitive online FPS where you are battling within a time loop, tactically teaming up with your past and future selves in mind-blowing 1v1 and 2v2 matches. All this sounds right up your alley with the whole online pew-pew shooter thing. So tell us about your time with Quantum League.
It should be right up my alley. And it has a lot of solid elements to it that does put it in my alley, but maybe not up it.
Uh-oh.
It's not 100% perfect. It definitely has some flaws. I'll get to those in a minute. The premise around Quantum League is that it is small first-person shooters reimagined around a time loop. So you only ever play 1v1 or 2v2 tops. That's the biggest the teams get. But your team grows throughout the different rounds of the games because you will have a set amount of time that you can move around the map and interact with the enemy, and then it loops backward. Then your clone and the new you, who is are able to move about. Whatever you did in the previous loop, that clone will continue to carry out every round.
And how many rounds are there?
At some point, I had as many as 6 and 7 clones running around. So it gets really intense because you're trying to remember the paths you've taken before so that you can split off and take new paths for your clones to go through.
I'm guessing you can pick off all those old clones of the opponent for points.
Exactly. And they can also pick off you. But however, say you have a round where you get picked off, and this is called a desync, right? There's two ways to deal with that. Because once you desync, your ghost can still continue to roam the map, okay? Until the round is over. There are health pods, and if those are charged up and you hit a health pod, you can resync and come back. So, for example, if you are walking forward and an enemy pops out and kills you and desyncs you, you can walk around that enemy, grab a health pod, resync, and be behind them and shoot them. Okay?
That sounds pretty, pretty cool.
Now, on top of that, the next round, you already know that clone is going to come out and shoot your clone. But what if you can get to that clone before it kills your first clone? Now, you're able to intercept and stop that clone from killing you.
And then your clone just goes on doing what it does.
It continues before. To follow whatever path you took as the ghost.
That's cool as hell.
So, that's how you populate the field and carry out getting kills and things. Now, the game only starts off with 3 modes. There's like a regular deathmatch type of mode, and then there's 2 different types of point captures. I will say, not enough mode variety at all, especially because the 2 point capture modes are so similar to each other that I couldn't tell the difference between them when I was playing them. It was only for the fact that it popped up and said the different names that I was like, oh yeah. Otherwise, I was like, I'm just trying to get to the point. It is fairly quick to get into a game. There is a tutorial that you have to play through first before you can. However, the tutorial, the first chapter of the tutorial legit has you play through and learn how to like move your clones around the map. Every other chapter of the tutorial is just a video. And that is the more advanced shit that you need to practice. I don't understand why they only made the first section of the tutorial playable, and then you just have to watch the rest. The funnier part is that they give you reward points for completing the tutorial segments. You only get 200 for the part that you play, and then you get an increasing amount for each one after that.
Oh my God.
Just for watching it. So you can tell they meant for you to play those. They just don't have you do it.
Maybe something that this should have been an early access, maybe a little longer.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Given the fact that there aren't as many game modes as you would think, this kind of game mechanic and the way that they have fleshed it out, there's tons of different ways you can make this work and be really cool. But they just were like, well, here's 3. It's good. 2 are kind of the same thing, but it's good enough. We gave them different names. You know, it feels a little like they took it off the burner just a little too soon. I also had a complaint that because it's been in early access, if you're picking it up and playing it now, there's no way to just play against bots or to practice or to play solo and just not have to deal with somebody. And like outside of that one tutorial level, which is just shoot these blank targets, there's nothing to let you get in a groove. And
that's a bummer.
your only option is just go get your face shit on by more advanced players who have been there since the beginning. Unless you have somebody to play with you, in which case then you can do a private match. I played with Studo. We did a private, you know, 1v1 to at least learn the maps a little bit before I went in and got my ass handed to me. I will say I did have to laugh because I got matched up with somebody who 100% knew what the fuck he was doing. 110% knew what he was doing. And he was just like showing off and making the rounds go incredibly long so that he could keep killing me. But I wasn't having any of that shit. And when I figured out what he was doing, I started setting myself up so that he would be focused on killing all those other clones. And then I went and scored the point and won it in the game. So fuck him. I won anyway.
Nice.
He can do whatever he wants. I'm still the winner. I sat awesome. Right in front of the point, the final round, and just sniped him from across. Dropped him. It was so satisfying. Such a satisfying win. But That leads me to one of the other issues. The mobility in the game, given that it's this super cool mechanic of just, you know, move around and place where you are and everything, but the actual mobility is really stiff. The gunplay is not nearly as satisfying as it could be. It got to a point where I realized that, like, okay, it's taken me like 4 shots to kill this guy with a shotgun. I hit him with grenade launchers multiple times. He did not give a fuck. Nothing happened. SMGs didn't hit. Pistols, and they took off one little thing of health. It got to a point where I was like, if you're not using a rifle and quickscoping, you're not getting anybody dead. So that needs balanced out a little bit more. The gunplay and the time to kill could use a little bit of work. But also just the overall movement. Like, you can jump, but it's so slow to do it that you're like, I will do anything to not have to hit the jump button. Additionally, they made the jump button LB for some fucking reason. And I'm like, why? Who the fuck are bumper jumpers? I don't understand that. Like, nobody's voluntarily a bumper jumper.
Well, as it stands, $10 on Quantum League. What are you thinking?
Man, I thought you were going to say it's more than $10.
Nope, $10. It's actually on sale right now for the next day for $5.
Oh, God damn it. At $5, I would say pick it up for the novelty of it and see where it goes. At $10, it's a little more of a hesitant try. Like I said, it got taken off the burner way too soon. Yeah. It really needs some more time. It needs some more polish. It needs some more community input and just a little more fleshing out to really, I mean, thank goodness it's not more expensive because then I would have been like, ugh, can't do that. but even at its price tag, it's like, okay, $5, sure. $10, maybe.
Not as sure, but if.
Yeah, you have to be a little more. If you got a friend you could play with. Yeah, you have to be a little more invested in the idea.
Yeah. All right, well, next up is Tribal Pass, developed by Shawstack Games, published by Samustai Limited, released April 16th on Xbox One for $6.99, a genre-twisting tactical runner where you maneuver, fight, think, sacrifice, and evolve all on the run. Brunel, tell us about your time with Tribal Pass.
I evolved 8 and did that other thing you said, all on the run. Well, I am. But what is this actual game? So it's, I don't know, it's not an endless run. I'm trying to think of how to describe it. It's basically one of those kinds of games where you sort of go on loops, like runs, quote unquote runs, where you are controlling a shaman and his tribe as they progress across, you know, terrain. And their goal is to get from the beginning of their journey to the end. Now, the way this plays out is you have 2 general resources, people and food. People eat. And if you don't have food, they die. So what ends up happening is you start out with a certain number of people in your tribe. Let's just start out with a make-up number here, 10 people, right? Now, as they're all running, they can do – you don't really get to control them more or less. This is an auto-running game. you're scrolling from the top to the bottom. And what you are able to do is two things. One, use the trigger buttons to either spread out your cluster of people or bring them back together. So you might have 10 people. If you hit the right trigger once, you'll have two groups of five and they split. Do it again. You might have, you know, three groups of three, and then one of them has four, basically. And the idea, the reason why you would do that is for a few reasons, too. So as you're walking down the screen, various obstacles show up on the map, and they have a variety of different purposes. Some are great, such as you might come across a plant that is a source of food. So what you need to do is hit the triggers to spread your guys out in the way so that at least one or more of your guys runs over that plant so that you can harvest it and get more food for your tribe. Sometimes you'll come across like obstacles, such as like bridges. So when you see the bridges going over a river, you need to actually cross the river. So you need to split your tribe up in a way that they are all crossing over a bridge. So if there's three bridges, you need to have three different groups that all cross over the bridge. If there's one bridge in the middle, then bring the group back together so they can all cross the bridge together. But then as your group expands and gets bigger, you get a few other abilities you can select and have at the ready when you need them. The first thing you can get is the ability to hunt. So you'll be able to equip all of your people with spears. And the purpose of that is to hunt wildlife. Sometimes you'll see like antelope on the screen. And when you see them, you can bring your tribe in so they'll kind of run over the enemy, kill them, and harvest them for food. Now, since they're wildlife and they see your dudes coming, they're going to try to run away. So that's where that whole expanding and contracting comes into play. Because you might say, see an antelope. Antelope sees your guy and starts to try to run to the left. If you can time it, you can spread your tribe out to the left so that the antelope runs into your guys and boom, free dinner. Venison, baby. but not all wildlife is killable. And you might every once in a while see like a tiger waiting to pounce. And if your tribe runs into him, the tiger's going to eat your people and they are dead. So be mindful of that. There's other wildlife too. You got to be mindful.
Bump into a rhinoceros that just fucks your world up.
Yes. And I was trying to get cocky. I was like, maybe if I got like 30 guys, we can just rush it. Nope. Fuck that. You're dead. That rhino was not to play with. The next thing you can do is get fire. What does fire do? Well, every time you finish a level, you get to then choose the next route you're going to take. And when that each route has a variety of different like characteristics. It might be like, you know, flush with food, which means great, you can run through that bad boy and load up on grub. Very few obstacles. Sometimes you might be like, it's a barren wasteland, tons of enemies trying to kill you, and very little food to pick up. That aside, once you've chosen a route you're going to take, the game then offers you the opportunity to travel at night or wait till morning. If you wait till morning, it's safer, but you have to sacrifice food to hang out for the night. So if you don't have a bunch of food in your coffers, you're traveling at night. And traveling at night fucking sucks.
Yes, but it does.
Have a torch, you can at least see some of your environment, which is better than nothing. And so as long as you have a decent enough group of people, you'll have the ability to use torches. But heaven help you if you got to travel at night. Because just like Joe said, yeah, it sucks. You are likely to screw up and die many times at night. Every game I've lost because I had to travel at night. The next option, if I'm remembering correctly, is straight up cannibalism. If you don't have enough food, but the journey needs to continue, you got to eat somebody. So people become the food and you kill your tribe. So whoopsie doodle. So that's an annoyance, but it has to be done. And that's those. I mean, I feel like there's like one other action that I'm kind of forgetting, but those are the ones that I'm remembering. I do know that one of the main ways you can also get new tribesmen is sometimes you'll see like a group of them camped out on the field and you can walk over them with your tribe to recruit them. However, and maybe I'm just misremembering, but I could have sworn it was a time I walked over a group of people on the field and they instead ate me. They didn't join me. They you know, ate
me. So I've had murders happen too. I don't know if it's random. I don't know if it's luck. I don't know what it is.
It might be population quantity. Maybe that's what it is. Like, if you have less people than they have at their base, they'll eat you. But if you have more, they're like, well, we'll join the bigger party. Let's go. But yeah, it's not a foolproof thing because I have definitely had, you know, a tribe of people eat my guys instead of joining up. There's like quicksand, there's rhinos, there's insects. Sometimes you come across like poisonous plant. There are a variety of different obstacles you'll come across in this game as you're running down the map. It's a simple game to play control-wise, but it's also what I genuinely did find it fun. Just going for that kind of high score feel. That's pretty much what this game is. There's no like beating it per se. You're shooting for high scores. How far can you make it before your tribe dies, or how big can you get your tribe? But it's fun to play in that regard. I don't recall any modes. It's mainly just the run mode. You click single run start and you get busy. Can you think of anything that I might be not thinking about?
Not really. It's just, it's a tough game. This was another one I just had a really tough time getting into. It just seems really punishing where, like, I didn't realize if you have your spears out and you hit bushes, you're not collecting food.
That is right. They make you shuffle between your action. So, and that is actually the fourth action. Maybe that's the one I'm forgetting. It's just going straight up bare bones. Like, you're walking around with
gathering food. You have your weapons out. You either have your torches out or you sacrifice someone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a lot of shuffling, a lot of juggling, and it's kind of overwhelming at first. And even with the tutorial there, it doesn't seem very easy to get into. The bright side is the fact that it is only $7. So
true.
For $7, what do you think of Tribal Pass?
I feel like for games of this nature, this is a quality product, because I understand that there's a very specific niche for this kind of game. This is like a pick up and play, let's see how far I can get today sort of deal. And with that in mind, I think it's totally cool. Like, it does its job well. You aren't going to see a bunch of new stuff. You're not unlocking new stuff or anything, but what you get is solid. And I think it'll also be enjoyable, doubly so if you've got a friend who gets it and you're comparing each other's scores, you can get the farthest or something. What about you?
I think it's worth a try. It's cheap enough that even if you don't have that much fun with it, you're supporting developers who are doing something different.
I guess I could see that. I'm not catching the different per se, but
it's just like I haven't really seen a game that treats the auto running like this, and how, you know, the parties split up, and it's kind of math based on how many people you have and the routes that you have to take. I thought it was something different, and for $7, I think it's worth supporting. I don't know. I
can
just
see that.
Gameplay wise, it just didn't hook me as much as I wanted it to.
I can see that. And sometimes I think that might be another case of one of the things I feel is a big component to like games like this or runners, which is the music. I think music is a good way to get a person to kind of vibe with what they're doing. And the music in this game is just kind of like, oonga, 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 boonga.
Yeah, it's not much.
So that might be the missing link to drive the hook capacity.
Needs a Vert soundtrack like Shantae.
Oh God! Oh shit! If they had a Vert soundtrack, this would be a super fun. Because I'd be pulling one more round because I want to hear music. And I do play games with that exact mindset. Like, I want to hear this track again. I'm going to go one more time. So, if you're listening, devs, get hire Vert to do a rocking tribal tune. And boom, there you go.
That'd be amazing if they got Vert. That's our second good idea this episode.
Yeah, we're full of them.
Ah, man. It's been
full of something.
Yeah. Well, we got two games to preview quick. The first one is Ampersat, developed by Gateroos Inc., published by Gateroos Inc. and Grab the Games. This one will be releasing May 28th on Steam. A shooty slashy RPG-y game mixing retro and modern sensibilities. A blend of influences from Gauntlet to Smash TV to Zelda. Ampersat is a handcrafted adventure, but with appeal to roguelite fans. Battle assy creatures in colorful areas and free letters to return language to the village. I said assy. I don't know if people say assy or ASCII.
I asked once, but I don't remember what the answer was.
I don't know either. I just like saying assy.
Yeah, assy's good.
Assy.
Like so this
how's,
game. No, I'm just
how's
kidding.
Ampersant? Is it assy?
No, it's ASCII. yes, so this is a excuse me, a top-down, very top-down adventure game. That is to say, it's that kind of bird's eye view, like they mentioned Gauntlet, and that's pretty much what this looks like. You know, you're looking directly on the top of where there would be a hero's head, but your hero is actually an ampersand, which that's actually, it's not quite that, though. It's this.
Oh, like, it's the at symbol. Sign. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's called ampersat, which I'm not sure.
I think that's just what it's called. It's called an ampersat.
Is it? No. Oh, okay. There we go. Yeah, it is. Okay.
Ampersand is the and. I guess we just take off the amper.
Hmm. Okay.
So what does the amper stand for? Let's dive in.
Yes, exactly. Well, if I type it in chat, then it just pulls up a list of names. So in that sense, it could be anybody. Maybe that's why they picked it. Anyway, it could just be because it's a circle within a circle, and that's good enough to be a character. So you start off near a hub town, and it is flanked on all sides by different dungeons. And your character that can move around or can dash, and dashing, it basically, like, you know, it's a really fast, like, you know, dash to, like, you know, 10 feet that way, and then it has to recharge. So it's kind of a good defense maneuver, but not really something you can just keep on and, you know, keep going, unless you build up your levels that way. But we'll get to that. And the character has two different kinds of things. One is a melee weapon, and you use one of the, well, if you're playing with a controller, you use one of the shoulder buttons for that one. And then the other is a spell, which you use with the other shoulder. Now, the spell, instead of costing mana points, it's infinite use, as far as I can tell, but it has a cooldown. So, like, it has a heat meter. So if you use it too much, then you have to wait a little bit. And you can actually just hold down the button and keep casting it. So in that sense, it becomes like a shooter. A twin stick shooter, by the way, because you use the right stick to aim yourself and the left stick to move. So it can either be like, you know, in that sense, a gauntlet style, you know, hack and slash, or also like gauntlet, I suppose. You know, you can shoot stuff at things. So you infiltrate any of these dungeons, and to me, they all seemed about fairly even on difficulty. You know, first stage is not that hard. Second stage is hell. And then third stage, I imagine, is even hellisher. But, you know, the cool thing is you can just leave anytime. And if you gain enough experience points, you have to go back to the inn to rest up and gain a level and then distribute a point. And the points are actually, this game actually features skill trees, and they go off in like six different directions. So you can, like, really, you know,
there's some depth to this.
There is some depth. So in each of those dungeons, you fight a certain set of enemies, and every enemy, whatever their name is, the first letter of that name is how they appear on screen. So you might be fighting some E's, and that's like elven, you know, wizards or something like that. I don't remember what they were called. Or like a G is a goblin. But, you know, on screen they appear as those letters. And in each level of each tower, or maybe more, I don't know, but at least in the first level of each tower, they'll tell you if there is a letter to rescue. And like Gauntlet, you go through and defeat enemies, and they spawn infinitely from these nests. And if you defeat the nest, then that cuts off the enemies. Of course, that also cuts off your experience points. But again, when you leave and re-enter the dungeon, then all of it resets anyway. Hmm. So at a certain point, I don't know if it's like one of those torches or barrels or something, or if it's like an enemy nest. But eventually, something that you hit will produce a letter that you then rescue. And if you're about to leave a floor without rescuing a letter, they warn you because, you know, it might not be there, I guess, next time. And when you rescue letters, it rescues, or rather it, so like the overall story of the game is that I guess the villagers have lost their words, and you rescue the words one letter at a time. So if you rescue like the letter A, you can then talk to some NPCs in town, which, by the way, are just a bunch of dashes, and they'll be able to talk to you, but only with the letter A. So it's kind of like Wheel of Fortune, you know? like, I'd like to buy a vowel, and, you know, it shows up there, and then the rest are lines. So you're kind of like playing, I guess, reverse hangman or something. But anyways, well, I guess it's just regular hangman. So I haven't gotten far enough to rescue enough letters to have a decent chat with anybody. But I assume
there's still time on this one. This is just a preview for now. We'll be taking another look at the game later on in May. So you have more time to get more letters. Oh, yeah. I believe in
for
you.
For sure. For sure.
But
and
for
it
now,
seems like,
oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, for now, like, you know, while you can get items in the dungeons and stuff to improve yourself, there are shops, and I believe you have to unlock the letters in order to access the shops. So there's definitely a lot of depth to this game that has yet to be uncovered.
Cool. Well, we will talk about it more next month. There is a free demo available on Steam. Is this something that people should be keeping an eye on?
Yeah, I think this is a really interesting adventure, and I'm really liking what I'm playing so far. It's very compelling.
Cool. All right. One final game to preview tonight is called LSD Prologue to Lasting Spiritual Derangement, developed and published by Fabulous Games, released April 7th on Steam as a free-to-play prologue. The full game is slated for a Q3 release on Steam. LSD is a first-person experience set during a hallucinogen trip. In the prologue of this dreamlike, surreal experience, you will explore mysterious open worlds, find weapons, and fight against dangerous enemies. Will you be able to break the loop and get back to reality? Purnell, tell us about your time with Prologue to Lasting Spiritual Derangement.
Well, I'm glad it's free, and I'm glad it's got a good two quarters left before it's done, because I think it needs to bake. Need to bake a bit more. But what I did experience visually, I thought had some potential to it. So the idea behind this game is that you are a guy or girl, you're a person, wakes up in bed and he explores his house and he trips. That's basically all I can say. Like, I think if I remember correctly, the beginning of the game, you walked, you got out of bed, you could turn on your radio, listen to the different music, and then you eventually go into your bathroom, and there's a red white pill in there that in turn, as you know, it's in the area, you go to the bathroom, you leave, and then you turn back around, and the bathroom door becomes a portal, which leads to a hallway that has a red and white pill in it. And it's just like a lot of like interesting visual effects that tends to occur as you're chasing this pill around. But it is like, you know, various weird words and stuff. There might even be like some sort of sentient being that's playing with you, or it could just be the fact that your character is tripping. I don't know. But then eventually you end up in a open environment where it's kind of like a sort of, I guess the best way to describe it is like a Middle Eastern village. And you're chasing a dragon that ultimately results in you finding a sword and a key, which you then use to fight a dragon that's land-based. And you use your trigger button to slash at it and ultimately eventually defeat it. And then you fight another dragon who's airborne. But at this point, you learn how to shoot fireballs from the sword. So you fight that dragon and win. And then you go into like a room where you chase more pills, which leads you to a sky environment. That's the best way to describe it. Like a hovering base above the city where you're fighting a bunch of dragons. You defeat them. And then you choose a tunnel to enter. And the tunnel I chose told me, you made the right choice. Game over. I was like, all right, cool. Done.
Good job.
I did a good job. I did well. Me did goody. So I guess it's definitely apparent this is an intro game or a demo for what could be to come. Because I feel like that village that I described is a fairly large environment, but there's nothing to discover in it. Aside from the sword and the key, which leads you to where you fight the dragon. So, and there's also a bunch of doors that you do come across that have a lock symbol, which implies that I'm guessing in his full game, you'll be able to explore this environment, maybe find other items here. Maybe there'll be more monsters to fight or something. I don't know. But that gave me the impression that he's intending to do something with that because of all the locked doors.
Developer asked us to take a look at this game. I think it is a very weird project. I don't really get what it's exactly going for. I couldn't progress that far in it. I don't know if something was up with my game. I would get to an area where I go up a set of stairs And then I would drop and I would miss a platform and then I would wake up every time. And it's, I couldn't get past that.
I know what you're talking about. It was the part where it was in a white room. You ascend the black staircase and then you walk forward, pick up the pill and you turn left. And
no, there was nothing at the top of the steps for me.
Okay, that's strange then. Yeah, because the black staircase was supposed to lead to a pill, which then made you turn left and you walk through like a wall, and then there's a pill behind the wall. But as you walk towards it, you eventually have to jump to try to grab it. And I would miss that jump multiple times, which resulted in the same thing. I had to wake up and do that whole sequence again until I eventually got the jump just right. And then I was able to proceed forward.
No, something must have been up with mine. I'll have to do a reinstall because nothing would appear at the top of those steps. So I would try like running and jumping, and I couldn't figure out anything. I thought maybe something was broken, but the fact that you completed the game, something is fucked up on my end, I guess.
And I can tell you one thing that's odd about this for me, which is the fact that while it may sound harsh for me to say this, but I didn't feel like there was anything particularly special about this thing. Yet, for some reason, I wanted to win. Like that last battle was kind of bullshit in its own way, but I figured it out. Like, you basically end up having to fight like five dragons at once, and then the super dragon that comes down from the sky after you defeat the first five guys. And I ended up pulling it off because I was like, I want to see what happens next. Where am I? What's going to happen? And something does happen, and it was weird. But I still felt compelled to do more. So that's where this description of like how I feel about this gets strange, because on one hand, I didn't feel it did anything particularly special, but I also typically find myself playing games like that and going, you know, I'm kind of done. I don't want to deal with this anymore. I'm annoyed. Or something like that. But instead I said, I wanted to keep doing it. I just want to beat these dragons and see what happens. I said, oh, look, now a dragon's flying. I'm going to beat this dragon's ass too and see what happens next. Oh, a bunch of dragons. I got to beat all their asses and see what happens next. So with that implied, I think the best thing I can say is that maybe my thing is that I like the visuals that the guy did. And I do like when games get weird. That's just a general thing for me. And this game does do that. I feel like it helps that it is free, so that'll help for my review final. But I feel like when he does the full game, I'm hoping he's got the intent for like an upgrade system or something, because I do know at one point while you're fighting that swarm of dragons, you defeat one of them and he gives you an item that lets you throw three fireballs instead of just one from your sword, which was handy to fight the super dragon because I wasn't meleeing his ass. Screw that. So something like that was kind of interesting. And there was also some platforms up on that sky area that let you run fast when you hit them. And like flying carpets were when you stepped on it, it elevated you to a higher platform. So there's potential here for him to do more with it. Some upgrades, some equipment, other areas you can explore and make it so it's not just like a single goal environment. Make it so you can actually find things and do things there.
Yeah.
So well, with that in mind,
as it stands, this being a free to play prologue on Steam, what do you is it worth the download? Is it worth checking out?
I would say it could be worth the checking out, but since I already experienced the whole thing, what I kind of want to actually say is like it's more like a keep your eyes on it, like see what he does with this next version of it, because I feel like it doesn't offer much in this version of it, but I can see where he could be potentially taking it. And I want to see where it goes next. See what he adds to make it more of a deeper game.
All right. Sounds good. Well, that is it for this episode. Made it through.
Oh my God.
My high wore off. So I'm like dealing with you people now. And it's
sucks to be you, chump.
If only something were legal in my state and I could smoke on camera. Lay sigh.
And that's why you get edibles, so no one knows. You're just eating candy.
Edibles don't really do anything for me, surprisingly.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. Never got a buzz off them.
Yeah, I'm contemplating actually buying some, because apparently they are legal here. I'm like, huh.
Do it. Do it. Bears. Give him a go.
We'll see.
Do it.
Next Tuesday.
Such a bad influence. You're supposed to be... I was actually watching an old... Speaking of which... I was watching an old Zach Morris's trash because it showed up in my my history stuff, and it was like, huh, the episode where the movie star was smoking weed in his house, and Zach was like, "Drugs are bad." And I'm sitting here watching this, and I'm like, "Wow!" Even when that episode aired, like most of my friends were doing weed, and I, my logic at the time was just like, "It ain't for me. I ain't getting my ass beat by my folks, but I'm not going to judge my friends for smoking it, whatever." Like. I couldn't imagine myself seeing like this movie star was like being really cool to me and friendly, happen to smoke weed and be like, "You're an awful guy." I just like, "I don't know why you smoke weed, man.
Fuck you money. And fuck your marijuana, buddy."
Exactly. I'd have been more like, "You know, that's all for you, man. I'm too cheap for that shit though. But we can still hang out. Let's play some cards." You know, but like that's how I always felt about it. Like, even as a kid, I was like, "I don't think weed's that big a deal. It's just not for me." Now, if I just walked into your room, you were like freaking snorting lines or some shit. Oh, fuck that. I'm out the door. And if a friend of mine is getting peer pressure into him, I'm going to beat his ass. like, no.
Well, I would hope none of us are snorting lines before the show, but I guess it would be possible with some of our guests. Don Thacker comes to mind of someone who could very possibly be doing cocaine at this very moment.
Oh, allegedly. No, that,
allegedly. That dude is so hyper and talkative. I love him so much.
No, he's naturally hyper, and I love him for it. Like, he doesn't need drugs for that. If anything, if he actually did drugs, the world couldn't handle it.
Oh, man. Well, you know what else they can't handle? They can't handle some fat Shantae beats, so I'm going to end the show with some Shantae. Does anyone have any final words to end the show?
Drugs are bad. Don't do them. Send me a check for $5.
Shantae.